Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, November 12th, 2013. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Accused Moscow murderer said he doesn't remember shooting the victim who died Sunday. General Electric Megalod does not make it to Montana state line as scheduled and gets stuck under an overpass on Northwest Boulevard in Coeur d'Alene. And Idaho House member who lost his concealed weapons permit for not reporting a former felony charge from Florida gets his concealed weapons permit back because of an Idaho exemption to the law that only applies to elected officials. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report.
The United
and live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Moscow Police Chief David Duke has told the Daily News police had previous contact a number of times with alleged murderer Nathaniel H. Nesbitt at trailer number 31 in the Bel Air Trailer Court on North Polk Street Extension in Moscow. Nesbitt was arraigned today in District Court in Moscow on a murder charge, and police interview notes written by Officer William Shields were submitted. According to the Lewiston Tribune website, Nesbitt told Shields he doesn't remember shooting McMichael. Shields quoted Nesbitt saying, "It's weird, it's like he's yelling, and then I'm standing there and he's on the ground." Duke said the 28-year-old Nesbitt, who they had previously thought to be the ex-boyfriend of the woman who has the lease on the trailer, is now thought to be her ex-husband. Nesbitt is accused of barricading himself inside the trailer Sunday and then shooting and killing 42-year-old Charles McMichael on Sunday afternoon when McMichael managed to push his way in. McMichael had arrived with the estranged ex-girlfriend or ex-wife and his own wife to help change the lock on the door. Police arrived a short time later and arrested Nesbitt, and McMichael was transported to Gritman Medical Center, where he died of multiple gunshot wounds. Chief Duke said the four people at the trailer had worked together at a cleaning business. Police confiscated a 9mm Beretta handgun that they believe was used in the shooting. Neighbors said they heard at least three shots fired inside the trailer. The General Electric Megalod heading to the Alberta tar sands did not make it to the Montana state line as scheduled this morning. Observers with climate activist groups observed the giant 644,000-pound wastewater evaporator get stuck under a bridge on Northwest Boulevard in Coeur d'Alene late last night, and Megalod hauler Omega Morgan made an apparently unplanned trip with their load through downtown Coeur d'Alene on Sherman Avenue. The 15-foot, 9-inch high load is the twin of the load that passed through the Nez Perce Reservation and the Wild and Scenic River Corridor on U.S. Highway 12 in August. That load was temporarily blocked by members of the Nez Perce tribe as it approached the border of the Nez Perce Reservation, and then future megaloads on Highway 12 were stopped by a federal court injunction. General Electric wanted to transport a total of 10 of the giant loads up U.S. Highway 12 through Montana and to a production facility near Fort McMurray, Alberta, where the Athabasca Oil Company would take possession of the equipment. Today we spoke with Herb Goodwin of Occupy Bellingham, who traveled from the coast to observe and protest the tar sands megaloads. Goodwin described what he observed late last night and early this morning.
They were wedged under the bridge and they had gotten under there and gotten the load part way under, and it appears they either hit the bridge or realized that they were going to hit the bridge.
This was on Northwest Boulevard?
It was on Northwest Boulevard, and I believe that the bridge actually is the bridge, the Highway 95 bridge there, from what I can see on my map. And I realized that I noticed that the puller truck was no longer a puller truck. They disengaged the puller truck and put a push truck at the front of the load, and they were in the process of pushing the load back out from under the bridge because they couldn't get under it. And so these pusher trucks, we captured video and lots of pictures of this, but they actually pushed the load then back under the bridge and pushed it down into the downtown area where they could get on a cross street, I believe it was Sherman Avenue. So they pushed the load down into downtown, pushed it with going backwards actually, and got on a Sherman Avenue. And then they had to go across Sherman Avenue, which 2 or 3 miles across down intersects Interstate 90 at a third interchange there. And it didn't look like they were prepared for that at all. They, as they were going through this, it was kind of like a main street, and lots of businesses on both sides of the road, and lots of wires across the road. So they had folks up on a cherry picker raising the wires so that they could get under them to proceed east on Sherman Avenue. It took them probably an hour or so to get over to the freeway interchange there. And we were quite proud to eventually be able to get in a location where we could do our light projection action against the vehicle.
So where is the megaload parked now?
Well, once it got onto the freeway on the I-90 headed east, our understanding was they had a permit to proceed until 6 o'clock in the morning in a easterly direction, and they were supposed to get out of the state of Idaho and into Montana during that time. We followed that load up the interstate. It was real slow going. And once there's a large bridge that the freeway goes over as it heads east out of Coeur d'Alene, and they had that completely blocked so that the weight of the megaload was the only weight on the bridge as it went over it.
That was Herb Goodwin of Occupy Bellingham describing what he saw early this morning east of Coeur d'Alene along Interstate 90. Goodwin said observers drove past the megaload and waited for it to travel further east towards Montana early this morning, but when it did not arrive, they went back towards Coeur d'Alene and found it had apparently parked for the night at a turnout about 15 miles east of Coeur d'Alene at about 3:30 a.m. Moscow Police Chief David Duke and Humane Society of the Police Director Lori Freeman gave a report on the Humane Society this afternoon at the Moscow City Council's Public Works Committee meeting. The Humane Society operates the animal shelter on White Avenue. Here's Police Chief David Duke.
Last month we received a call from a concerned citizen that there was some issues with dogs and vicious animals at large. Following up on that, we determined it was actually in the county, but the woman stated she was concerned that the shelter was housing vicious animals and putting those into the public, which we could not determine, but we wanted to clarify exactly what we do as a city for the shelter, and then Lori is going to present what the programs are, just as a point to say that we don't house, shelter, or adopt vicious animals into the community. They're highly regulated.
That was Moscow Police Chief David Duke reporting to the Moscow City Council's Public Works Committee this afternoon. Humane Society of the Palouse Director Lori Freeman also addressed the committee.
And some of the things that we do provide is we do have a spay and neuter assistance program, which is $50 off of a spay and $30 off of a neuter, and that's good for all Latah County residents. And they just get a coupon from us and take it to the veterinarian and get that done. And then the shelter itself makes up the difference in that. And last year, for example, for our spay and neuter assistance program, we provided about $3,400 to citizens to get their animals fixed. We also provide placement assistance through petfinder.com to help people find homes for their animals so they don't have to bring them into the facility, trying to keep that cage space open for strays without having to take in the owner surrenders. We also have a community feeding program, so we provide food for people who may be in a tight spot that month. On average, we service about 30 individuals a month. Of course, just like every food bank, it's based on donations, so sometimes we have enough to give out and sometimes we don't.
And that was Humane Society of the Palouse director Lori Freeman addressing the Moscow City Council's Public Works Committee this afternoon. Republican State Representative Mark Patterson of Boise, who had his concealed weapons permit revoked because of a 1974 felony guilty plea in Florida, had the permit given back to him because of a 1990 Idaho law which gives elected officials an exemption. Idaho is the only state that allows its elected officials an exemption to the rule denying concealed weapons permits to convicted felons or those with withheld judgments after pleading guilty in 2007, and then in 2012, Patterson did not disclose the two felony charges relating to rape when he applied for a concealed weapons permit with the Ada County Sheriff's Department. His concealed weapons permit was revoked late last month. Patterson was given a withheld judgment after he pled guilty to assault with the intent to rape in Florida. The application for a concealed weapons permit in Idaho says a withheld judgment in a felony conviction is enough of a reason for disclosure on the application. The elected official exemption in Idaho applies to all positions, including school board and governor. Since 1990, lawmakers have added highway district commissioners, jail guards, and city and county officials to the list. Republican Representative Luke Malik of Coeur d'Alene told the Spokesman Review, "I think the message it sends is that elected officials get perks, and when it comes to the Second Amendment, I think that's particularly disturbing because essentially it's saying we should have more ability to protect ourselves than the average citizen." Republican Representative Lynn Luker of Boise said he supports the exemptions, but added, "Certainly public officials can be targets in their own rights, especially in today's world, but I think it's something that we need to have a further look-see at." Republican Representative Frank Henderson of Post Falls also questioned the exemption, saying, "I have a philosophy that those of us in public office should be under the same laws as the general public." House Majority Leader Mike Moyle said he thinks the exemption creates a double standard. In a letter to the Idaho Republican Party Executive Council, Latah County Republican Chair Walter Steed said he will step down from his position if the Idaho Republican Party formalizes their decision to hold the state convention in Moscow next year. Steed sent a letter ahead of the Republican Executive Committee meeting this week in which the committee will decide whether or not to hold their convention here. The letter was sent to Idaho Republican Chair Barry Peterson and board members to apologize for the recent tension between Steed and Peterson. Last month, Peterson attended the Latah County Republican Party meeting and asked Steed for some time to address the local membership. Peterson said he asked for the time to speak over a week ahead of time, and he wanted to introduce himself to Latah County members and ask questions and answer questions members might have. Steed did not allow Peterson to address the meeting. He said the agenda was set and Peterson was not on it. The snub caused uncertainty on whether or not the convention would be held here next year. A decision is expected to be made tomorrow. After the October 29th meeting in Moscow, Steed resigned his position as convention chair, and vice chair Thomas Lawford agreed to assume Steed's duties. Steed announced he will step down as Latah County Republican Party chair in an effort to keep the convention here. Idaho Republican Party Executive Committee member and Region 2 chair Leanne Collier told the Daily News, "At this time, the executive committee has no interest in working with Steed due to his attitude towards Peterson." In the letter, Steed said he does not want his issues to make the party move the convention elsewhere. Steed said, "Therefore, in order to further distance myself in any way from handicapping the convention in Moscow, I will immediately step down from my position as Latah County GOP chairman as soon as the Idaho GOP Executive Committee votes to honor the Central Committee's decision to hold the convention in Moscow, and I receive satisfactory assurances there will be no further efforts to move it to another location." Peterson said Steed's resignation and apology will help in the decision to hold the convention in Moscow, even though Peterson has no vote. He added, He's grateful for the apology. Khalir said she can recommend Moscow as the site for the convention because Steed has made an announcement that he will resign. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks wants to trap and kill up to 130 deer that live in the Helena city limits. The proposal before the Fish and Wildlife Commission is part of Helena's urban deer management plan to reduce the animal's population in the capital city. Since 1993, about 670 deer have been removed, including 140 this year. According to an October survey, Fish and Wildlife officials say the city has a deer population density of 14 per square mile, down from 34 per square mile only a year ago. They also say the population is actually higher than the survey says. On Saturday night, the Moscow-based environmental group Friends of the Clearwater gave its Organization of the Year Award, renamed for the occasion the Nation of the Year Award, to the Nez Perce Tribe. Nez Perce Tribal Executive Committee member Brooklyn Baptiste, Tribal Attorney Michael Lopez, and Tribal Activist Julian Matthews accepted the award. Here's a portion of Executive Committee member Brooklyn Baptiste's acceptance speech recorded at the 1912 Center. You have to listen carefully because of the sound quality.
The magnitude of what had happened didn't really hit, and then it just went viral all over the Indian country. Everywhere, I have a lot of friends serving as chair. I knew a lot of people. First person I called was Winona LaDuke, and I said, I need your help. I need to get information up for me. So she called everyone, Friends of the Clearwater, everyone, all the people here came down and supported us. It was a common cause. It was huge, and I think it lit a fire that's still going now. Other Indian communities are stepping up. Other people are stepping up. You saw the huge protest in Minneapolis where they're protesting and demanding the name change for the Washington Redskins, those type of things. It wakens you up, and a lot of you have already been there. For us, it had just started, and I'm standing there like, we don't know what's going to happen, but well, here they come, and they come around the corner. Just whatever. Then our people were singing a song with local jungle group, and that song that they sang was a song that our forefathers in 1855 sang when they came into the Treaty of 1855 in Walla Walla. That's how old that song is. It predates the treaty. Actually, that song that they sang predated the arrival of Lewis and Clark in 1805 as they came over. That's how old that song was. And they were singing that. Our people were together for a moment, and that's to say something like anything else. You know, we could all disagree or, you know, agree to disagree, but our, you know, politics in the Indian country is tough. So it was great. And I think that we got a long ways to go, but I think we never get too carried away with our victories or too caught up in our sorrows over our losses, because you have to manage it, and that's what you do. You manage your battles. And for us, the environment is just as important as to you. It will continue to be. I think that we can continue to strive to work together on protecting what we hold sacred. Not only sacred to us, but everyone. A fish doesn't care who's going to catch it. A fish, how we see things that are sacred, because a tree doesn't want to be better than the next tree. A tree isn't jealous of another tree. It just wants to do what it has to do. And that's how they live. Same with the fish, same with the animals in the wildlife. They don't live like human beings. We're not sacred like that. And so that's how we see things. We have to protect something that's more sacred than us. And the intent of what we do is important, and the purpose is bigger than the position or the personnel. And I think tonight's a good example of what we can do together, what we can create. And I think before, most people didn't respect any of us. They didn't even figure, State of Idaho didn't really care about any of us. And now they're rearranging, and now they're thinking, well, geez, we didn't think they would band together like that. They figured they would just divide and conquer. And here we are, those guys. We don't want them going through here anyways. We don't want them going to the end result to a planet-killing project up there. And that's just the start of it. You know, we have relatives up there, but just what we do to protect the Earth is important. So I'll get off my soapbox, but I just want to say, Makis Katsi out to every one of you for your hearts and your passion for the environment and what you do on a daily basis that makes life worth living. And tonight's a good celebration of that, and it's an honor to be here, represent the tribe, and say a few words on behalf of.
That was Nez Perce Tribe Executive Committee member Brooklyn Baptiste speaking at the Friends of the Clearwater annual meeting held Saturday night at the 1912 Center. The Friends of the Clearwater gave its Organization of the Year Award to the Nez Perce Tribe for temporarily blocking the General Electric tar sands megalode as it approached reservation boundaries in August. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, 20% chance of showers before 7 p.m., patchy fog after 1 a.m., otherwise mostly cloudy, low 39, patchy fog before 10 a.m. tomorrow, otherwise partly sunny, high 49, mostly cloudy Wednesday night, low 34, 30% chance of showers Thursday, mainly between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m., otherwise mostly cloudy, high 45, 20% chance of showers before 10 p.m. Thursday night, 60% chance of rain and snow after 10 a.m. Friday, mostly cloudy, high 39. 60% chance of rain and snow Friday night, becoming all snow after 10 p.m. Little or no snow accumulation expected, otherwise mostly cloudy, low 32. 70% chance of snow on Saturday, otherwise cloudy, high 37. Currently, we have 48 degrees and overcast at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport. Well, thanks for listening to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next is This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian News Magazine, followed by Flashpoints, the Daily Investigative News Magazine, at 6:30. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow, now on 90.3 FM, full power.